When this country seat was finished and fit for habitation, the intendant of the gardens went and cast himself at the emperor's feet, and after representing how long he had served, and the infirmities of age which he found growing upon him, begged that he might be permitted to resign his charge into his majesty's disposal and retire. The emperor gave him leave with the more pleasure, because he was satisfied with his long services, both in his father's reign and his own, and when he granted it, asked what he should do to recompense him. "Sir," replied the intendant of the gardens, "I have received so many obligations from your majesty and the late emperor, your father, of happy memory, that I desire no more than the honour of dying in your favour." He took his leave of the emperor, and retired with the two princes and the princess to the country retreat he had built. His wife had been dead some years, and he himself had not lived above 6 months with his charges before he was surprised by so sudden a death that he had not time to give them the least account of the manner in which he had discovered them. The princes Bahman and Purvis, and the princess Perizade, who knew no other father than the intendant of the emperor's gardens, regretted and bewailed him as such, and paid all the honours in his funeral obsequies which love and filial gratitude required of them. Satisfied with the plentiful fortune he had left them, they lived together in perfect union, free from the ambition of distinguishing themselves at court, or aspiring to places of honour and dignity, which they might easily have obtained. One day, when the two princes were hunting, and the princess had remained at home, a religious old woman came to the gate, and desired leave to go in to say her prayers, it being then the hour. The servants asked the princess's permission, who ordered them to show her into the oratory, which the intendant of the emperor's gardens had taken care to fit up in his house, for want of a mosque in the neighbourhood. She bade them also, after the good woman had finished her prayers, to show her the house and gardens, and then bring her to the hall. The old woman went into the oratory, said her prayers, and when she came out, two of the princess's women invited her to see the residence, which civility she accepted, followed them from one apartment to another, and observed, like a person who understood what belonged to furniture, the nice arrangement of everything. They conducted her also into the garden, the disposition of which she found so well planned that she admired it, observing that the person who had formed it must have been an excellent master of his art. Afterward she was brought before the princess, who waited for her in the great hall, which in beauty and richness exceeded all that she had admired in the other apartments. As soon as the princess saw the devout woman, she said to her, "My good mother, come near and sit down by me. I am overjoyed at the happiness of having the opportunity of profiting for some moments by the example and conversation of such a person as you, who have taken the right way by dedicating yourself to the service of God. I wish everyone were as wise." The devout woman, instead of sitting on a sofa, would only sit upon the edge of one. The princess would not permit her to do so, but rising from her seat and taking her by the hand, obliged her to come and sit by her. The good woman, sensible of the civility, said, "Madam, I ought not to have so much respect shown me, but since you command and are mistress of your own house, I will obey you." When she had seated herself, before they entered into any conversation, one of the princess's women brought a low stand by mother of pearl and ebony, with a china dish full of cakes upon it, and many others set round it full of fruits in season, and wet and dry sweetmeats. The princess took up one of the cakes, and presenting her with it, said, "Eat, good mother, and make choice of what you like best. You had need to eat after coming so far." "Madame," replied the good woman, "I am not used to eat such delicacies, but will not refuse what God had sent me by so liberal a hand as yours." While the devout woman was eating, the princess ate a little too, to bear her company, and asked her many questions upon the exercise of devotion which she practised and how she lived, all of which she answered with great modesty. Talking of various things, at last the princess asked her what she thought of the house, and how she liked it. "Madam," answered the devout woman, "I must certainly have very bad taste to disapprove anything in it, since it is beautiful, regular, and magnificently furnished with exactness and judgment, and all its ornaments adjusted in the best manner. Its situation is an agreeable spot, and no garden can be more delightful. But yet, if you will give me leave to speak my mind freely, I will take the liberty to tell you that this house would be incomparable if it had three things which are wanting to complete it."
"My good mother," replied the Princess Parizade, "what are those? I entreat you to tell me what they are. I will spare nothing to get them."
"Madam," replied the devout woman, "the first of these three things is the talking bird, so singular a creature that it draws round it all the songsters of the neighbourhood which come to accompany its voice. The second is the singing tree, the leaves of which are so many mouths which form a harmonious concert of different voices and never cease. The third is the golden water, a single drop of which being poured into a vessel properly prepared, it increases so as to fill it immediately, and rises up in the middle like a fountain which continually plays, and yet the basin never overflows."
"Ah, my good mother," cried the princess, "how much am I obliged to you for the knowledge of these curiosities? I never before heard there were such rarities in the world. But as I am persuaded that you know, I expect that you should do me the favour to inform me where they are to be found."
"Madam," replied the good woman, "I should be unworthy the hospitality you have shown me if I should refuse to satisfy your curiosity on that point. And I am glad to have the honour to tell you that these curiosities are all to be met with in the same spot on the confines of this kingdom toward India. The road lies before your house, and whoever you send needs but follow it for 20 days, and on the 20th only let him ask the first person he meets where the talking bird, the singing tree, and the golden water are, and he will be informed." After saying this, she rose from her seat, took her leave, and went her way. She was absorbed in these thoughts when her brothers returned. The Princess Parizade's thoughts were so taken up with the talking bird, singing tree, and golden water, that she never perceived the devout woman's departure, till she wanted to ask her some question for her better information. For she thought that what she had been told was not a sufficient reason for exposing herself by undertaking a long journey. However, she would not send after her visitor, but endeavoured to remember all the directions, and when she thought she had recollected every word, took real pleasure in thinking of the satisfaction she should have if she could get these curiosities into her possession. But the difficulties she apprehended and the fear of not succeeding made her very uneasy. She was absorbed in these thoughts when her brothers returned from hunting, who, when they entered the great hall, instead of finding her lively and gay, as she was wont to be, were amazed to see her so pensive and hanging down her head as if something troubled her.